And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have Dr. Riti Patel. She is a cardiologist at Lankanaw Health Institute at Mainline Health, and this year she is being honored for the Go Red for Women Champion for Heart Health, and welcome.
Thanks so much, Laura. It's really a pleasure to be here.
I'm really thrilled to have you here. We just came off of a wonderful month that does emphasize health for women. The American Heart Association, I want to talk about this as we go into this a little bit further, is one of the few organizations that really does pinpoint women's health, looks at women and how disease affects them, not looking at a total population.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a really important point. It's actually been about 15 years since the campaign started, the Go Red campaign for women. And I think there is a recognition that heart health is very important, not only for everybody, but for women, and that often gets overlooked. Many people still don't know that it is the number one killer of women and of men in this country, and actually worldwide. So it's one of the points that often gets lost in the discussion of, you know, all the things that go on, that cardiac disease is the number one killer of women, and that one in three women this year will die of either a stroke or heart attack.
And, you know, I keep forgetting to mention that the Stroke Association is part of your overall umbrella. And why is that?
Well, you know what? These things are all sort of interconnected. You can't always segment everything out. But obviously, the things that you do to improve your heart health are also going to be important in terms of preventing stroke. And I think that that is very important, not only for women, but when you look at subsets and different groups. So, for example, if you look at the African-American population, there's a very high link, very strong link, unfortunately, between heart disease and things like hypertension or high blood pressure and stroke. And so it's very important, I think, to educate people so that they understand the value of targeting and these things and taking care of themselves.
Well, let's get started with the basic Heart 101. What is heart disease? It's the entire cardiovascular system.
Yeah? Right. And I think that's a fantastic question because I think it just sort of gets lumped into this one term, but it is a lot of different things, as you alluded to. So I think most people, you know, the average person, you think heart disease, you think heart attack, mm-hmm. You think chest pain, and there are different pathophysiologic mechanisms of how that happens. But it's not just having a heart attack. The heart is a very complex structure. It has its own electrical system. It has its own valves. It has its own plumbing system. And all of those things can have different sort of problems with them. So you can get something called arrhythmias, which are abnormal heart rhythms. You can have valve issues or valvular disease. When it leaks too much, when a valve leaks too much, we the medical term for that is regurgitation. When it's not opening enough, we call that stenosis. So, you know, these are not, you know, those sorts of details may not be as important to remember, but it is worthwhile to sort of note, as you pointed out, that there's a lot of different types of diseases that are included under the umbrella of heart disease. Stroke and heart attacks is just one segment of that.
How many people are affected by this? How many people actually know that they have a vascular disease or a vascular issue?
Well, I think more people have it than actually know about it. I think for a variety of reasons, sometimes, you know, people are just busy. You know, you don't have the time to take care of yourself. People have insurance issues. People are busy taking care of other people. I mean, I see that in women a lot, where you are the caretaker or caregiver for aunts, uncles, parents, kids, spouses, everybody but yourself. And that's one of the things that we've really tried to target this year with our AIM platform, which is this idea of you're going to aim for your best health. You're going to advocate not only for others, but for yourself, which is sometimes very hard to do when you're pressed for time and taking care of other people. You're going to innovate in terms of looking for new solution, cutting-edge solutions for issues that you're dealing with in your health. And you're going to motivate to find a reason and to say it's okay. You need to take care of yourself.
What we haven't discussed yet is let's get a 101 on what is the American Heart Association and its mission.
The American Heart Association is a national organization that is really looking to make an impact in terms of improving the cardiovascular health of all Americans and decreasing the number of deaths, the more mortality and the morbidity that Americans suffer because of heart disease and stroke.
And that number is just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's It's a lot of, you know, over 800,000 people who die in the United States from heart disease, stroke, and other cardiovascular-related diseases every year. But, you know, we estimate that about 80% of those deaths are preventable. So there's something that we absolutely can do.
This is one of the few things that we can have an actual impact on and reduce the rates and all of that. So what are the common causes of heart disease?
Well, you know, things that contribute to heart disease and things that we can do, you know, some of these things are really unexciting and things that most people know, right? I mean, so, you know, what you put in your body, you know, what you eat is definitely going to have an impact on your overall health, and specifically, you know, things like high blood pressure, heart disease, heart attacks. So your diet is important. Your activity. And, you know, it's not that you have to bench press 200 pounds, but just the fact of, you know, are you moving? Are you being active on a daily basis? And with the way that life is right now, not only have we become more sedentary, but we have less time. Time is a premium. So you're trying to do all these other things, right? But in terms of just moving and doing stuff that's good for your health, you know, that becomes a little more challenging. But things like diet and exercise are important. Something else that I think we're learning more about these days is the importance of sleep and what we would call sleep hygiene, meaning that we have busy lives, we're up late, we're trying to do more stuff, we have lots of electronic devices. You know, all of these things actually impact our ability to get sleep. And most of us are already pressed for time in terms of getting enough sleep, but a lot of really important functions happen while you're asleep and while you're sleeping. And in particular, you know, many Americans are affected by something called sleep apnea, which is associated with high blood pressure, arrhythmias, and so that's something else that seems commonsensical, but not so easy to do. And these are things that are under our control that we can think about a little bit more in terms of changing our habits so that we are healthier.
You know, anything that you're doing that will help prevent the high blood pressure and the eating right and all that stuff really will affect other diseases as well. And so many other diseases have an impact on your heart health, diabetes, for example.
Sure. You know, it's a vicious cycle, right? And so the same things that make you, you know, unhealthy and can impact your heart health also are a role in many of the chronic diseases that Americans face, right? And that's one of the biggest health challenges in this country. Obesity is probably one of the chronic diseases that really gets a lot of attention. And it's a vicious circle because when you, let's say, have extra weight on board that you shouldn't, it predisposes you to diabetes, which then predisposes you to heart disease, which then predisposes you to stroke. It's bad for your joints. It makes you feel bad. So, you know, there are a lot of things that happen that aren't good for you. And everything feeds into something else. So,
well, and obviously we can quit smoking. That was one of the suggestions that the Heart Association has always mentioned that. But there's one thing we can't change, and that is our genetic makeup. And you alluded to race already, ethnicity, et cetera. What are some of the things that are contributing to this that we're not quite sure about?
Yeah, well, you know, as you said, there are a lot of things that we are not quite sure about in terms of the genetics. You know, one of the populations that is actually very effective, has a high rate of heart disease is actually South Asians. So, you know, for someone like myself, you know, my parents immigrated from India. Indian people have a very high rate of heart disease, even when you account for the fact that a good portion of them may be vegetarian and may be non-smokers. And so these are all areas that, you know, we don't have the answers to. But if there are questions about what your risk is, it's important to talk to someone. And I think that sort of segues into the importance of knowing what you can know about your family history. And, you know, understandably, it's not always easy. You know, sometimes you don't know the details. It was a different time. Your family members may not know the details. You may not have a relationship with a family member. So you don't have all of that information. But as much as you can learn, I think is helpful in terms of knowing what your risk is up front before anything happens.
Are you more likely to have heart issues or cardiovascular disease if a parent or grandparent, et cetera, have it?
Sure. And I think some of it, honestly, is what age did that parent or grandparent have their disease at? So generally, we ask when people are younger. So if you've had heart disease, if a parent, let's say, has had heart disease in their 40s or 50s, you know, that's still a very different issue than someone who develops heart disease in their, let's say, 70s and 80s. And also, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell. You may have had a parent who in the past did not know and was a, let's say, a heavy smoker, ate poorly. You know, we have so much more information now. So those are important questions to ask to really figure out how strong is this link and what is my genetic risk. And it's an important discussion to have with your physician.
Well, you mentioned age just then, too. As we get older and older, you're looking at vascular dementia, you know, your likelihood of other things because of a lifetime of eating badly or exercise habits. But what about young people? Are you seeing what we would consider age-related disease in young people now?
You know, unfortunately, we are. I think you speak to any cardiologist and they will have stories of people who have had heart disease or heart attacks or strokes, let's say in their 30s or 40s, you know, things that you would not have expected to see. And I myself, unfortunately, have had some friends, family members, patients who have, you know, been very young. You know, we had a friend who unfortunately passed away in their late 30s from a heart attack, did not have a lot of traditional risk factors. Another friend that we know who is also a patient had a heart attack when he was 39, and he was a physician as well. And so these are things that we're seeing more of, and I think some of it is also related to some of the chronic health issues that we see in this country, particularly obesity.
And there are so many things we don't know about our health, our hearts, until something happens, unfortunately.
Right.
Heart Association brought in one time a young man who had survived, cardiac arrest, and had been fortunately revived. And he was a spokesperson for you for a while. And he came in and we chatted about that. So the Heart Association, what are you telling us here? How do you know your risks? I mean, there's know your numbers and know your parents' age when they developed it. But when should we start getting assessments, or what should a parent ask a doctor when they bring their child in for that first physical, or when they're a baby, etc.?
Look, I think that's a great question.
There are a lot out there. Just wrestle it to the ground and talk for a while.
Well, the problem that you mentioned with that young gentleman or that young patient, you know, that's a very different type of heart problem, and it's very scary. And I always tell my patients that, you know, we want to control the timeline, and you want to be proactive. You want to know about things before they happen. You don't want the damage to have taken place. You know, there are guidelines already in place that, you know, if you have a pediatrician, you take your kids to the doctor. I mean, they will talk to you about routine screening and blood screening and looking for cholesterol. So there are already guidelines in place for when that type of blood work is done. Secondly, I think the importance then of family history comes into play. So if there is something specific that is unique to your family or some type of family history that you know of, that's something that you want to at least bring up with a physician in terms of asking for more specifics. And that's an easy place to start, is whoever your internist, family practitioner, pediatrician may be, to say, hey, look, this is something I'm concerned about. Sort of what is the next step? I do think it's important to be sort of mindful and reasonable about testing, because you don't want to fall into this rabbit hole of endless testing and not know where you're going. But I think generally speaking, when people are in their 30s, it's something to start thinking about in terms of, hey, you know, what does my routine blood work say? What does my cholesterol say? Is there something more I should be thinking about? And most importantly, I always tell people, you know what, even if we know medicine, you know your body, right? How do I feel? Does something not feel right? And if it doesn't, that's important. I think that has a lot of value.
Well, we're going to talk more about women and heart disease, but now I want to ask something about in the examination room. Do women get assessed the same way that men? Because you just said, you know how your body feels. But if you say, well, I just feel sluggish, or, oh, I'm having this, can it be wiped out as, oh, well, you're a woman, these are hormones, or you're a woman and maybe it's depression and you're not getting enough sleep, et cetera. Do women get the same kind of assessments that men do? And are doctors asking earlier for women or early enough on women?
You know, the honest answer to that is probably no for many people. And I think there are a lot of studies that talk about the fact that there are disparities, not only with women, but also other different ethnic groups. So there are disparities in how people are receiving medical care. I can only speak to my own practice, which is to say that, you know what, whether it's a man or a woman or, you know, whoever comes in, I think that these things are all important in terms of how they're assessed. And it's on an individual basis. So it's not only how the patient feels, it's their physical examination, they get an EKG, it's their family history, and it's their lifestyle in terms of assessing, hey, what type of risk are you at? And do we need to do anything more to look into this?
What are some of the symptoms that should make us ask, hey, can I get more testing? Or maybe I should see someone like you, a real cardiologist.
Right. So some of the usual questions that we ask for, and there are obviously variations in everybody, is you always ask about chest pain and whether people – sometimes they'll say it's chest pain, chest discomfort, chest pressure. You know, people may describe it a number of different ways. Shortness of breath. You know, do you feel different? You know, could you take a couple of flights of stairs without a problem? And now it just doesn't feel the same, and you're more winded, you're more tired. Do you have lightheadedness? Do you ever feel like you're going to pass out? You know, particularly if you have certain types of valve issues, that's something that can manifest itself. Do you have any swelling? You know, do your legs swell up? Does your belly swell up? Sometimes that can be a sign of having poorly controlled blood pressure, of having congestive heart failure, which, you know, certainly is a concern. And just overall changes in your functional level. You know, can you do the things that you could, let's say, a year or 2 years ago? And sometimes those things, you know, take a little bit of time to assess because, as you mentioned, Laura, people change, right? You might get older. You might have put on a couple of pounds. You might be anemic. There may be other things going on in your health history that impact how you feel. But that's why it's important to have a more in-depth discussion with a physician and sometimes see a cardiologist.
And of course, I am speaking with a cardiologist today. If you are just tuning in, I'm Laura Lewis, and you are listening to Our Delaware Valley. And with us today is Dr. Riti Patel. She is a cardiologist at Lankanaw Heart Institute at Mainline Health. She's also being honored for as the Go Red for Women Champion for Heart Health by the American Heart Association. And that is who she is representing today. If you'd like more information, of course, anywhere you're hearing this, you can always go to heart.org. Heart.org will tell you all the information that we are talking about, from tips on diet and exercise to smoking cessation to where to go in your community. And if you're interested in what we're talking about today, we're going to go to, it's real easy, follow them on Twitter, first of all, at AHA Philly. AHA Philly will tell you everything that is going on in the Delaware Valley, or you can go to ahaphilly.org/, and this is important, capital letters, GRFW20. 2019. That's for Go Red for Women 2019, GRFW 2019. And I'm going to put those down on the podcast so everybody can follow the links. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Let's get back into it then and talking about women. And here you are, the Go Red for Women champion for heart health. Let's talk a little bit more about women, because you've already alluded to that symptoms and results are different for women. And if you want to scare us with some numbers, go ahead and repeat those, and then talk a little bit about this and why the Heart Association is going red for women.
And as we talked about in the beginning of the program, this is, you know, it's a big problem. And in this country, cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death, more than all other cancers combined, for men and for women. In addition to that, we talked about how one in three women this year will die from some cardiovascular-related disease or stroke. And so, you know, those are big numbers. And not only does it affect, you know, sort of longevity and you know, you're worried about people and surviving and sort of your mortality, but also the morbidity. And I think, you know, that sometimes is easy to forget, that it's your quality of life, right? By morbidity, we're talking about how are you affected in terms of your overall health. And if you have a stroke and you can't move part of your body or you can't speak, if you have congestive heart failure and it's very difficult for you to play with your grandchildren because you get very short of breath or you can't sleep comfortably, if you have heart disease and you have what we call angina or chest discomfort, and you're concerned about being able to go out and do things because you're afraid that that activity is going to bring on chest pain, you know, those are big factors in your quality of life. And so I think ideally one of the things that we hope we can do in medicine is not only help people live longer, but also live better. And I think that's a huge issue with heart disease and a big goal of the American Heart Association.
When we're talking about women, we already talked a little bit about ethnicity there, but is this a big problem in particular communities?
Sure. You know, we talked about the fact that at certain communities, unfortunately, are disproportionately represented in terms of, you know, how much heart disease we see. We already talked about how in the African-American community, there is a very strong link between cardiovascular disease, especially things like high blood pressure and stroke. And in the Hispanic community, community. And the American Heart Association has done a lot of work in this area as well. Almost 30% of Hispanic women have high blood pressure, and 43% of Hispanic women have high cholesterol. So these are high numbers for any particular group. We talked about South Asians as well, how there's a higher likelihood of coronary artery disease. And so we're beginning to learn more about these specific groups and whether there are any genetic issues in particular that we need to be concerned about. We don't have all of those answers. But to just remember that, you know what, your background, your ethnicity may put you at higher risk for development of heart disease.
Why the Go Red for Women then? You want to talk a little bit about that whole campaign? And what do you do with them, actually? Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the Go Red Women campaign, as we talked about earlier, you know, started 15 years ago. And I think it started because of a recognition of the fact that women have these issues as well, but we have not done a good job of highlighting that women suffer from heart disease, and women therefore themselves don't know. And so the Go Red campaign really wants to highlight the fact that women are disproportionately affected. This is the number one killer, more than all other cancers combined. And so it's important to be as vigilant about that as well. What we have done this year and what my role has been is to sort of spread that information, and also to when speaking to people and to groups of women in particular, you know, to talk about some of the things that we've already addressed in this conversation about what can you do to sort of find out more about your health, to improve your health, and sometimes also just to let women know that, hey, you know, it's okay. If you can't take care of yourself and put yourself first, you're not really going to be able to take care of all the other people in your life that you care about. And I do think that women are quite exceptional in terms of how much they think about others.
You do great events throughout the year, from the Heart Ball to, and I don't remember who told me this at the Heart Association, but that getting more women as physicians, getting more women into research and caregiving is really important as well for women. So you've got the Go Red for Women, the STEM classes for young people. And you got a great thing coming up May 10th, and jump in here, the Go Red for Women Luncheon.
Right.
And you'll be honored there, won't you?
I will be one of the people there. I will say there's a lot to unpack in that last statement, but a lot of interesting topics. And so we just had the Heart Ball, which was in February, and that was a great event. And we had the opportunity to discuss so many members of the community who have contributed, especially with their scientific research. As you said, the Go Red Luncheon is coming up, and I believe that's May 10th. And for anybody who is interested, they can go to that website that you mentioned, which is ahaphilly.org. /GRFW, which is Go Red for Women 2019. And you know what? We can talk about women in medicine and cardiologists in medicine. That is, I mean, you could do a whole topic on that. But I think that really segues into, like, a lot of issues we see across many different fields. I think there were estimates that just came out that less than 15% of women are cardiologists. So a very low number. And I think that having more representation changes not only the way women's issues are addressed, but also changes the nature of scientific research as well, in terms of understanding that, you know what, women physiologically may be a little bit different, and we have to look at some of those differences if we want to be able to treat these diseases in a more effective fashion.
Well, obviously, the American Heart Association is working towards that with the Go Red campaign, because at least you're getting that message disseminated among the communities to at least bring up the conversation and say, am I at risk? Should I be looking for help? And how can I help myself? And so how can we help ourselves? What do you want us to be the takeaway from this? What should we be doing?
You know, the takeaway from this, and I'm going to go back to our AIM platform, because I think that summarizes it pretty well. And that platform was really, number one, to aim for your best health, and is to advocate for your health. So that may mean talking to your physician. That may mean even taking a few minutes to think about whether you have any issues, taking some time to say, hey, what is my family history? Do I need to get these details? So to advocate for yourself, to innovate. There are lots of new technologies, and I have been very fortunate to work with some great colleagues where we have great technologies, not only in terms of looking for heart disease, so new types of monitors, for example, different types of surgical techniques. We have a lot of minimally invasive techniques. We have what we call transcatheter techniques, where we can do amazing things, things that are game changers in medicine, like replacing a heart valve without ever having to open you up. I mean, that's a big deal. But there are a lot of these cutting-edge technologies that we have access to that, you know, it's important to educate yourself about or at least talk to someone about if you think it's something that's going to help you. And the last and the most challenge, I think, for everybody is to motivate. You know, where do you find the time, you know, in your day when you are tired, you are drained, you have done so many other things to, like, you know, go out and exercise or to make yourself a healthy meal or to even sit for 5 minutes and clear your mind. You know, all of these things are important in terms of your overall sanity, which absolutely is related to your physical health. So we're really trying to encourage women to aim for their best health.
And, of course, when you go to your website, the awesome thing is that you have things like recipe information, information how to cut back on the salt and cut back on the sugar, exercise tips. You've got so many things to offer from the Heart Association.
Yeah. There's a lot of information in terms of lifestyle change. There's also information on the website about different types of heart disease. So, you know, we've mentioned a lot of them, but one of the things that I think it's important not to forget about because it's so more prevalent now is heart disease related to cancer treatment. And so, for example, I had a patient who has moved from the area, a lovely, lovely young woman. She wasn't even 30 years old, who as a child had had a type of cancer where, you know, the traditional approach was to have a disfiguring surgery. And I can't even imagine having that type of an issue. And in addition to that, she had had an eating disorder at the time, too. And I think it's not widely known, but there are a lot of cardiovascular issues related to eating disorders as well. Fortunately, she did not have those. But because of this cancer treatment, she was fortunate in that she did not have to have the surgery, but she did get chemotherapy. And as a result of that, there was concern that she was going to develop weakening of her heart muscle or something that we call a cardiomyopathy. And so this is something that we are much more vigilant about in patients who are getting certain types of chemotherapy. Again, not all types, but certain types of chemotherapy. And you definitely see this in the population of women who are, let's say, getting chemotherapy sometimes for breast cancer. You can see it. And so it's something that we're more vigilant about. And fortunately, this young patient did not develop that. But it's something that she was monitored for a decade. And unfortunately, the story has a happy ending. She's doing well, and I think she's expecting her first child. But, you know, understandably, in the back of her mind, she's worried about whether her heart is affected or not.
So the best advice is go to your website?
Yeah. Look, I think a couple of things. I think going to the website is great. I think it's a great place to start. The internet has been very helpful in that sense. But like anything else, you have to edit. Right. You have to edit and you have to know what to listen to. And I don't think you get that, honestly, from the Internet. I think that's something that takes a more in-depth discussion with a professional, you know, and someone whose judgment you trust. And I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, there are so many different factors involved when we treat patients that it's not always black or white. Mm-hmm. And you have to really tailor the options in terms of treatment and what makes sense for the person who is sitting in front of you. So it can be different for every person. So yes, the website, the internet, it's a great place to start. But at the end of the day, if there are more specific questions and something that's more serious, it really helps to speak with a physician.
And of course, you would know my guest today, a cardiologist at Lankinaw Health Institute at Mainline Health and the Go Red for Women champion for heart health this year, Dr. Riti Patel. And of course, if you go to heart.org, you'll find information about everything that we have discussed today, from diet and health tips to information about great upcoming events in your area. And here in the Delaware Valley, of course, we have events like Home Runs for Heart, May 6th and 7th. You'll find out more information about that there. there. And for information about the May 10th Go Red for Women luncheon at the Crystal Tea Room, go to ahaphilly.org/GRFW2019. Dr. Reedy Patel, thanks for coming in today. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.